This is Self Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. I've often had clients tell me, in some ways, I wish I'd been hurt physically somehow. I don't really, but at least I might have known I mattered. I got nothing. It didn't matter what I was feeling or needing. My parents paid no attention. How do you begin to have a sense of who you are, of your value, if you weren't one of the lucky ones that was noticed? Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. So many of my episode ideas come from you, and this is another one. In my Facebook group, which is open to all of you, it's facebook.com/group/self-work. Someone asked the question, do you ever wish you were more important to someone than you are? Like, I know I'm important to some people, but there are others where I feel like they are more important to me than the other way around, and I feel bad about it. That's so stupid, right? The main answer was, no, that's not stupid. But for me, it brought up the whole topic of mattering, and that's what we're going to talk about on Self-Work today. Mattering. How you may have learned you mattered or didn't matter. How is mattering different from self-esteem, or is it? And as always, what can you do about it? Meaning, what can you do about it if you feel you don't matter? Our SpeakPipe message this week is from a mom who's very worried about her son's drinking and alleged abuse of his wife. There's a grandchild involved as well. I'll have a couple of ideas for her and for you if you're in this situation at all. It's a really, really tough one. No matter what your situation or challenge, BetterHelp may be just the right space for you. It's an online therapy, and here's their offer for Self-Work listeners. BetterHelp has long been a sponsor of Self-Work, and a great one. And of the several online therapies out there, they by far have the most highly rated. In fact, I looked it up to make sure, and Forbes has BetterHelp rated more highly over both Talkspace and online therapy, the other major online providers. Now, you might be asking yourself, so why would any good clinician want to work for an online service? Let me tell you, those clinicians don't have to take care of all the business details, the paperwork, the insurance filing, the scheduling service, none of it. I myself have been approached by BetterHelp several times to join their network. And when I saw the benefits, frankly, if I hadn't already had too much on my plate, I would have joined. You can communicate through text, chat, video, or phone, whatever is most convenient and works for you. And the number one problem that so many people face when considering therapy, that problem is taken care of for you. What is it? How do I find someone? The BetterHelp website asks you questions, you answer them, and then they find a therapist that fits best for you in your area. If you have one session and don't get much out of it, all you have to do is let them know and the process starts over again. It's private, professional, convenient, and affordable. These are licensed professionals, someone who's put years into their training so that they can best help you. And so much of the hassle is taken care of for you. They now have 35,000 clinicians in their network, up from 25,000. So now is your time to choose BetterHelp. And if you use this link, BetterHelp.com/self-work, you'll get 10% off your first month of sessions. It's BetterHelp.com/self-work. I promise you, good therapy helps. I know. I've been there. It helped me, and it can help you. Today, we're basing this episode from a question my Facebook group received, and then many people responded. Just in case you missed the intro, here was the question. Do you ever wish you were more important to someone than you are? Like, I know I'm important to some people, but there are others where I feel like they are more important to me than the other way around, and I feel bad about it. That's so stupid, right? I thought you might enjoy hearing a couple of the responses. Here's the first. Not at all. I get the same vibe from people. Everyone wants to matter. To me, nothing feels worse than not mattering. I'd rather have someone not like me than not even know or care I'm there. At least I could be angry for a good reason. So here he's saying that he'd rather be the target of someone's anger, meaning that they care enough to be angry, than to get the message of, you're pretty much invisible to me. Here's another answer. Not stupid at all. I found out the very hard way that I've spent my entire life putting in so much energy and effort into family members, mainly my father and sister, to only have them show me repeatedly that I never was very important to them. It's taken nearly 2 years of therapy to be able to accept my unimportance, quote unquote, in their lives and be okay with it and realize it doesn't define me or my worth as a person, sibling, or daughter. And if anything, it makes me cherish the relationships I do have and to let those who I deem to be important know that they are important to me so that they never have to question it. And on the flip side, I now care less, don't get my feelings hurt, if people don't like me or don't want to be around me. I see it as their loss, not mine. I love that. It's their loss. They don't get to know me. I've done work with lots of clients who feel this unimportance to family. There could be so many causes or sources. Maybe one child was the favorite. Maybe the person who feels unimportant has moved away, or maybe you've always been right there and you're just simply not appreciated. Maybe you're gay or you don't share your family's beliefs and so they have made you feel like you don't matter. That is very, very painful. That kind of ouster from the family because you're different. And suddenly you become unimportant because you don't share their beliefs. It's just a really, really tough situation. And I think that you have to spend a lot of time grieving in all of its aspects and then creating your own family of choice. And here's one more response to the question. Relationships are always needing review to take stock of what I seem to mean to them versus how I value them. Relationships are never 50-50. They don't work out well if that's what we give routinely. This does not have to be done in a mean-spirited manner, I'm still quoting, but if one party makes almost all of the effort to be mentally at your best, you must decide if it still works for you. This comment reminded me of the importance of context in relationships. You might be really tight, for example, with school friends or work buddies. But if that context changes, if you change jobs or all of you go your separate ways, then that sense of mattering can change. I also love the proactivity of this listener's comment, asking yourself, do I value them? And if so, what for? Rather than all of the attention or worry being about, do I matter to them? And they point out it's not all about anger or conflict or being demeaning. Sometimes what you value, what you need, what they need changes. And that can be understood and accepted. So you see, I got a lot from the Facebook post, but then I got curious and started looking around for more information on mattering and why it matters to matter. And my particular interest here on self-work, how depression affects mattering, and of course, vice versa. I found a Scientific American article that will be in your show notes that talked about mattering in depth, and I'm going to focus on several aspects of mattering that I hope will be helpful to you. Here's the first, and it's a quote from a man I really admire, Dr. Gordon Flett. He says, a sense of significance or insignificance begins in childhood. What makes neglect by parents so destructive, he says, is the message it sends to the child who is made to feel irrelevant, invisible, and insignificant. I've often had clients tell me, in some ways I wish I'd been hurt physically somehow. I don't really, but at least I might have known I mattered. I got nothing. It didn't matter what I was feeling or needing. My parents paid no attention. That's the conundrum of neglect. How do you begin to have a sense of who you are, of your value, and your safety if you weren't one of the lucky ones that was noticed, that was attuned to? If you were neglected, you have to learn to create that sense of importance, of mattering for yourself, but it's not easy. And experiencing neglect can, of course, create a sense of longing and emptiness that are a huge part of depression. Sometimes I don't think we understand the seriousness of neglect as much as we do or talk about the seriousness of abuse. But here it becomes very, very important. Now, here's another idea. Is mattering different from self-esteem? We often think of depressed people struggling with self-esteem. In fact, statements of low self-esteem are part of the symptom profile of depression. The answer to that question is sort of. Again, Dr. Flett says, and he researches this kind of thing, quote, mattering overlaps self-esteem, social support, and a sense of belonging, but is not identical. What's especially powerful, he says, is that compared to other psychological states, a low sense of mattering is more amenable to change. It's just easier to change. Let me say that again. Mattering overlaps with self-esteem, social support, and a sense of belonging. When you matter, you have a sense of belonging, I guess is what he's saying. So all of that interacts. But here's the good news. A sense of mattering can be changed more easily than maybe that deeper sense of self-competence or belonging or even social support. I like to use the word competence rather than esteem sometimes because many people can tell me what they feel competent at doing or being. But if I ask, do you like or even love yourself? The answer is rocky or even a flat no. Now, we're going to talk about changing your sense of mattering in a couple of minutes. But as far as this self-esteem issue is concerned, I've included a link on a podcast I did very early. It's number 33, how self-esteem and self-acceptance work together, even with depression. When my mom talked about menopause, she called it the change, and it was all very hush-hush, as if there was something wrong about something so natural. Thank goodness with mental health awareness and actual research, we're beginning to understand the huge role hormones play in women's bodies. Being postmenopausal has its challenges, but if you're going through either perimenopause or menopause, then I suggest you try Hormone Harmony. Why? Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about them. They help the body adapt to stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. Okay. Here's number three. Has mattering been studied? And if so, has it been broken down into what exactly it is? The answer to that question is also yes. And here are its parts, according to Brown University sociologist Gregory Elliott. It's awareness. Do people pay attention to you or walk right by you? Importance. Do you have people who take a real interest in your well-being? And the third is reliance. Are there people who would come to you for help, support, or advice? So when you feel like you matter, you feel as if people are aware of you, you feel like you're important to other people, and there are people who come to you for help, support, or advice. Awareness, importance, and reliance. Let's look at these a second, especially in the context of depression. If you're depressed, your thinking can be pretty foggy. So you may not be aware of others trying to pay attention to you or show interest. It's hard to figure out which might come first. The depression, the pulling inward, the sense of isolation, the internal experience of depression versus what's happening or not happening externally. What I'm suggesting is that you may matter. People may be showing you that you do, but your depression, the voice of your depression, is telling you that you don't. Now, of course, sadly, maybe you don't have people in your life that let you know you matter. That could be accurate, and of course, that can be very lonely and part of depression. This is kind of hard because it's so chicken and egg. Do I feel like I don't matter to others because I'm depressed? Again, one of the voices of depression that may be lying to you. Or am I depressed because I feel as if I don't matter? During my first divorce, for example, most of my ex's friends blamed me. I was actually living in his world much more than he was living in mine. And I understood that in many ways. I was the one that left. I was the one seeking the divorce. And pretty much, I was dropped like a hot potato. I didn't matter to them anymore. So I had to start over. My mattering to them, as we had talked before in this episode, had been very dependent on the context of me being my first husband's wife. He was a professor, and a lot of those people were teachers or faculty or that kind of thing. So when my marriage ended, that relationship ended. Maybe that example helps a bit to help you understand when sometimes things end because of the context ending. That I did matter to them, but I didn't anymore, when they had to sort of take sides in the divorce. They decided that I wasn't going to matter, which, again, might have been hard, but I did understand it to a great extent. The fourth interaction between depression and mattering that I wanted to bring up was this. If you're in a manipulative or narcissistic relationship, the narcissist or manipulator will definitely want or need you to feel that you matter when they want you to feel that way. But then they take it away, and others matter more than you. So that sense of mattering is something they manipulate. They can either pour it on, what's often called love bombing, and they can do that either at the beginning of the relationship or when they sense you're beginning to pull away. All of a sudden, they've come roaring back with messages of how much you matter, how important you are to them. But then, once again, they turn away from you. The messages stop or greatly decrease. They need to get their emotional needs met elsewhere with a new source, and you're just supposed to wait. Basically, you may need to leave or figure out how to leave this kind of relationship because it's not likely that you'll ever find a way to consistently matter to someone with these kinds of tendencies. It's called a trauma bond. And again, I'm giving you a lot of links today, but I do have an episode on trauma bonding that you can listen to if you want to. So please realize in this instance, however, that you do matter, but you're being told that sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. And that's how someone with narcissistic tendencies will manipulate you. Another point that's close to this one is when you get the message that you matter to someone because of what you do for them, what you provide, then that can obviously lead to problems. We can as individuals struggle with that our worth is what we do, but it can also be a huge part of a relationship. So you can greatly fear losing that. And then maybe you wouldn't matter. Probably the most common example of this is the discarded older spouse for a newer, younger version. And those feelings of being replaceable are quite tough to grieve. You mattered, and then you didn't. That's why amicable divorce is so wonderful in many ways, because actually both partners usually say, you still matter very much to me, and you matter because you're a co-parent, you matter because you've been in my life, but our marriage is over. So this idea of keeping on letting someone know they matter to you, even when the context of the relationship is changing, can be quite interesting. Now, let's talk about what you can do about this whole mattering thing, because it's important to feel that you matter. I loved this point. Challenge the thought that you must matter to everyone, because you're not going to. It's simply not possible. And you trying to make sure you do is exhausting. I had to laugh out loud years ago when I was in another country, and I asked the girl waiting on me if she knew who Oprah was. She smiled and said no. Not even Oprah mattered there. First, when you try to matter to everyone, you're giving away parts of yourself, giving away energy that you need for others that do let you know you matter to them, so you can feed those relationships. Here's the point again. Don't try to matter to everyone. Second, look for small moments, not big ones, where you can experience mattering. Small moments that either let someone else know they matter. For example, you smile at them in the grocery store. You wave when they let you pull out into their lane when you're heading to school. You acknowledge someone who's waiting in line for the same movie you're going to. You just nod your head or something. You notice. You're aware. They've got a small child with them, and you smile at the child, or you're just letting people know that you notice them, that you see them, that you're aware of them. And then look for those small moments that those same matterings are being offered to you. Now, again, depression is important here. And as I said before, when you're depressed, you can certainly miss the clues that other people are trying to help you, trying to understand. And that's, as we said before, a real conundrum. Now, this is so fascinating about mattering to me. It's the gift that gives back. Think about it. When you let someone else know that they matter in a small moment, they matter. You're creating your own sense of mattering. I made a difference in that person's life today for like 2 seconds, maybe, but I made a difference in their lives. I mattered to them because I showed them that they mattered to me. I added to their life, and in so doing, my own sense of worth increased. Again, I will say, it's the gift that gives back. And you can begin to do that today. Whenever you finish listening, let someone else know they matter. And you'll sense that your own value, your own mattering, grows. Look for the small moments, a smile, a glance, a gesture, helping someone out of their car, noticing when an older person is struggling, just anything about kindness, about mattering. Gosh, what would happen if we all began to try to show others that they matter, even in small ways? And what kind of gift would we be giving ourselves?
SpeakPipe message from DrMargaretRutherford.com.
Today, we have a SpeakPipe message from a mom who's really struggling with her son's alcoholism.
Hello, my 42-year-old son is self-sabotaging his life. It's very painful for me not to be able to do anything. I care for him as a mother does for their son, but his manipulation is wearing me down. I'm not sure how to love him, how to react to all the chaos he is creating in his short life so far. He is married with a 7-year-old daughter. I just am at a loss of how I could help. He is drinking a lot, being abusive to his wife. He accuses me of taking sides. I just want what's best for their daughter. I love them both. There's always faults on both sides whenever there is marital strife. No judgment, just a lot of positive hope that they can work this out through therapy.
There's a lot of advice that comes to mind for this very sad and lost mom as far as what she may need to grieve. Maybe there's alcoholism or addictiveness in her or her son's dad's family, and that can be an important realization. I certainly recommend that people, and especially parents, take the time to look at the family environment they created and take responsibility for what might have been a part of this son's problem with addiction and anger. And she could actually try to talk to him about that when he's sober, to see how that conversation might reach him in some way that she's not been able to as of yet. Meaning, she could say, you know, I realize that we didn't X, Y, or Z, or we did too much of X, Y, or Z, and I wonder if that's part of what's going on with you. I don't know, but a little self-introspection can be very helpful in that, because you're not always then talking about him, you're talking about yourself. Now, often individual attempts at trying to help someone with an addiction simply don't work. It may take the entire family to do what's called an intervention. At its most concrete form, that means that the family says, go into treatment or we'll have to shut off our relationship with you. Yes, it's dramatic and it's very serious. And the family has to actually mean it. And usually it's best done with a therapist or clinician called an interventionist who's led that type of intervention before. Residential treatment or rehab should also be ready to take the alcoholic or addict in right then. So it takes planning. It has to be very careful, but sometimes it can work. So I'd advise this listener to look into this. And of course, there's another link provided by the Mayo Clinic about doing an intervention. Good luck to you and your family. Thank you again to all for being listeners of Self Work. I'm just so pleased to have you here at, again, my Facebook group. If you'd like to join it, we're almost 4,000 strong at facebook.com/groups/selfwork. It's a closed group, so no one but the group members can see that you're in it or what your comments are. And we really get some great discussions going. There's lots of humor. There's lots of laughing. There's lots of friendship and support offered. And we'd love for you to be a member. You can always get my book, Perfectly Hidden Depression, at anywhere where you buy books. Give your indie bookstore a little help and order from them. And of course, if you go over to DrMargaretRutherford.com, which is my website and has everything I have to offer on that website, then you can subscribe to the website itself and you'll receive a weekly newsletter. every Monday morning, and you'll get a copy of my podcast for the week, my blog post for the week, as well as any kind of interesting things I think you might be interested in. One time a week, a 5-minute newsletter, nothing else, and I'd love to have you as a subscriber. You also get a free ebook called The 7 Commandments of Good Therapy. So that might be helpful to you. As we head into wedding season, let's not forget the little gift book that Christine Mathias and I put together. It's called Marriage is Not for Chickens, and it makes a great little wedding present. Again, thank you so much for being here. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.